Hey guys, this is Will Terry. I am so excited. My Kickstarter is now live for the Complete Kickstarter Playbook. It's a timeline checklist and guide to running a successful crowdfunding campaign for artists. This is the companion volume to my book, What They Don't Teach in Art School. So go check it out.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to 3-Point Perspective, the podcast about illustration, how to do it, how to make a living at it, and how to make an impact in the world with your art. I'm Jake Parker.
And I'm Lee White.
And all three of us, or I should say Will Terry's not here with us today. He's on assignment. But all two of us here have are professional illustrators, and we've taught at the university level. We have a combined 75 books published, and I think that's it. I think that's what Will says. Go for it, Lee.
And then I say, each week we take questions from you guys. We banter it out. Sometimes we agree. Sometimes we argue. But each time you're learning something brand spanking new. But this time we're doing something a little bit different. So I can't actually use that intro. This week we're actually going to start doing interviews with some of our favorite artists. And this week we have the amazingly talented Rebecca Green.
Rebecca Green. We just got done spending an hour talking with her, and it was fun. She's super cool. You know, she's got a unique perspective on, I think, creativity and sort of life, you know, with how much she's traveled and stuff. But if you don't know who Rebecca Green is, she's a working illustrator in children's books. She's done some editorial work. But I would check out her website, which is myblankpaper.com, where she has a blog she's been posting to for over 10 years. And these are like most recently, the last couple of years, these blog posts are just really great insight on how to be a creative person and a working professional and some of the things that people deal with. So it was really cool to like have her on, because I think she aligns well with what we think and what we're doing. She recently moved back to the States from Japan. She's a traveler. We get into that in the conversation. I don't know. What were some of your big takeaways?
My takeaway from her is interesting. She's an incredibly interesting person, and her work is so good. What struck me about everything that she's doing, not just the illustration work, but to how she's handling her business, how she's handling her life, is she's living it in a very authentic way that's based on what she wants to do. It's not like, oh, I'm supposed to do this. Yeah, it's very deliberate. It's her making a conscious choice of, do I want to do this or do I want to do that? And she says, okay, I want to do that. And that's how she styles that part of her life. And it seems like she's done that with every part of her life. Here's where I want to live. Here's how I want to spend my time. Here's who I want to spend it with.
Here's the style I want to do. You look at her older work and how she's like, no, I'm gonna shift into this different style here.
She's not chasing anything. She's really, it almost seems like, just discovering who she is and building the world around her. And man, if everybody did that, I think the work would get better, and then people would be a lot happier too.
Yeah. One of the things that I thought was really cool too is how she, like you said, takes an initiative. Like, she doesn't wait for an invitation to do something. She's like, oh, I want to do this thing and no one else is doing this, like specifically with the studio in Nashville, or was it Memphis? Somewhere in Tennessee.
Nashville.
And she's like, I want to have a studio. And so I'm starting one. I'm opening one and inviting artists. And I thought that was really cool. So let's get right down to the interview, shall we?
Yep. Let's do it.
I wanted to ask you, first off, you just moved to Michigan, right? Like this year. Mm-hmm. And prior to that, you'd been in Japan, and Lee was telling me you're like, excuse me, I just got a weird thing in my voice. So you moved to Michigan. You were prior to that in Japan for a couple of years. And I'm wondering what prompted this, this move, I guess, back home, right? Is this essentially where you are, where you're from? Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yeah. My husband and I are both from Michigan. And then we moved after college. We moved to Denver. We moved to Arizona. We moved to Denver, and we moved to Phoenix, Denver, and Nashville. And then we really wanted to live overseas. My husband's always wanted to live in Japan. And I think I was pretty open. I mean, we were both open, but he's an English teacher. And so he got a position there teaching English, which was amazing. And we got to live there for 2.5 years. And then after we moved so much, and I just think we both were like, we wanted to be by friends and family. And it just kind of felt like after moving that often, every city sort of feels the same. Like you just kind of gravitate towards those things that you need. And I don't know. Also, I think the pandemic shifted a lot of things for people to like what was important or how did you want to spend your time? And so we decided to come back to Michigan. And I'm so happy to be back. I think for a while it felt like, I don't know, if we go home, is it like, you know, kind of going back with your tail between your legs? Like, well, I just couldn't, you know, cut it in the real world. But it didn't feel like that. It just felt like, no, this is fine. This is going to be great. And we can still travel and stuff. But it was like having that as a home. It's been nice. So, yeah. I mean, it's a totally different world. We came back and Japan is such a special place. And being back, we're like, this is so much more boring and like, you know, but it's also fine. It's also fine. So
it's, I imagine it's, just, I visited Japan once, and I visited Michigan once, and really there is like, there's a cadence to life that's a little bit different in both places. And, I'm wondering, and Lee and I were talking about this morning before talking to you, like, are you pulling inspiration from these places, or does it, like Lee was wondering, does it matter where you live as an illustrator?
For me, it really does. And like, I think I'm super, I think inspired or affected by environment or where I am or what I'm seeing outside, the weather, or even the space I work in. So it's not like it's a planned thing, but if you go back and look at my work from Arizona, it's like broad landscapes, lots of cactus, huge sky, you know, everything like all these dusty colors. And then moving to Colorado was like a lot of greens and gold in the mountains. And yeah, I'm like super impacted by it. Japan was like, I think, so special that I'm still trying to figure out how it's impacted my work. But, you know, it's like sometimes that stuff shows up and you don't really realize it until after the fact. And then you can look at it and say like, oh yeah, that was from that place. And that, you know, that came from there. But
how did you end up in Japan?
How did I end up there?
Yeah.
My husband got a job teaching English there. So we moved there for a couple years. He's a huge gamer. So he grew up like loving Japanese video games. And he was really passionate about visiting. And we were like, we wanted to move overseas. So we're like, we're just going to go. I mean, we had never been there before. We're like, we're just going to go. And then try it. So
my wife's family is from there. My wife's Japanese. It's on, she's been a bunch of times, but I haven't been, my son hasn't been yet. And it's on our top tier. I mean, it's just such a different look. Like when, like going through her photos and videos and stuff, it's just such a different feel. And I'm wondering that, like, has that, you said you're sort of processing that on how it's going to end up in your work. Do you do any location sketching or anything like that? Just as a side interest kind of thing?
Yeah, I do. I wish I did it more. I always feel a little bit like weird about sketching in public. I don't know. Like if nobody could see me, then I probably would do it more. But I just feel like there's this, I don't know if you guys feel that way. But anyway, I did sketch in Japan. I wanted to sketch more. Like I wanted to sit in the middle of like these tiny streets and the buildings are just so old. And I took a lot of photos. So I keep thinking like I'll go back through and I don't think it's the same, but it's, you know, more comfortable. I think, in terms of like drawing, but yeah, it's a different world and everything is like, my husband and I we joke that like every, I don't know, 4 seconds, we were like, oh my God, that's so cute. Oh my God. That's so cute. Oh my God. It just like every day, the little shop and the details and the presentation and like everything.
Yeah, that's awesome. You know, the reason I don't sketch in public anymore is because of one question. And I don't understand why people have this question. Or not question, but sort of comment, is they'll come up, they sort of look over your shoulder, they see that you're sketching, and then they tell you that somebody they know also draws.
Yeah. They
What's
always
up with that?
Or they'll say, I can't draw a straight line, which is so sweet that they're connecting. You know, it's nice. Like, I appreciate it, but I also don't want to feel like I'm drawing so that somebody can come up and talk to me. Like, I just want to be there to study the thing in front of me, but it always
feels weird,
you know, I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good point. No, nobody would walk up to somebody playing guitar, stop them from playing and be like, I can't play that.
Yeah, I can't even, the only instrument I could play is a radio.
Yeah. I wonder if that's different because if you're playing guitar, it's almost assumed that you're like playing for somebody. It's
performance.
It's like, and that's the difference. You're like, I'm not performing. I don't need you to talk to me. I'm really just wanting to be here and drawing. But it feels like this because you're in a public space, you know? So
yeah,
I wish I did in public there, but I didn't enough.
Did you pick up the language at all while you're there?
Just like enough to barely get by. Like,
oh, yeah.
Just, you know, to be able to order and say, excuse me, and like order coffee and talk and very, very basic. And then when we got there, I just kind of let it fall to the wayside. I don't know if it was, it's a difficult language, you know, multiple, like learning the different alphabets and stuff. And I think I felt like I will not use this long term. And I just did not put enough.
Yeah. Now you said you went from Japan to Michigan, and then you said a little, you said it's sort of boring there. Did I hear that correct?
Yeah. I mean, it is compared to Japan. I mean, a lot of places are compared to, you know, I think something that magical. And my husband and I just bought a house in like rural Michigan. So we're out in the middle of nowhere and it's beautiful. It's so beautiful. I was driving this morning and there was sunrise and all this fog in the field. And I saw these really, this beautiful birds outside. And that's not boring, but like, you know, driving like next to like a Cash for Gold store and like a strip mall and like, you know, Walmart and like the big streets and like that is boring. And that's all over America. So maybe America's just.
It's that suburban sprawl kind of stuff.
Yeah, it has its moments. Japan had that too. You know, it's just that I didn't have a car. So I was never kind of like out in that area. But yeah, I mean, probably every.
Do you think, I mean, you're coming to that environment from having traveled so much. So you know, you're probably a really experienced traveler and have figured out how to work and travel and do all this stuff. The one question we get a lot on our podcast is, you know, I grew up in a place like you're describing, like middle of America somewhere. Do I need to move to a big city? Do you think that an illustrator can have a full career if they don't travel, if they're from one of those places?
Yeah. I mean, I think so now with the internet, but I think the reason that I have the career I have, well, is because of the internet, but also meeting people in person. Like there's just something that's really special about meeting and connecting in person. So I think if you live in middle America or wherever, I think you at least need to be able to go to a conference and see people face to face and connect with them. And then you can go back and you can make your work and you can share it and you can connect. But, I think one of the reasons that I made so many connections was moving to all those places. I also had studios in those cities. And I'm not talking about huge art cities. You know, I never lived in LA, New York. Like I haven't visited those places and really networked like that. But it was more so about just like meeting local art communities, having a space, having.
Now you were in The Warren here in Nashville. Is that correct?
Yeah. Kayla and I started The Warren.
Oh, okay. So I was also in the studio. So we sort of shared a studio, just didn't match up our timeline.
Okay. Yeah, it was so wild. Yeah, I think it's important. And that's one thing I will say that it's more difficult to have if you do live not in a big city or like you live where there aren't a lot of illustrators, that like day-to-day connection is.
So what is The Warren? Like, I have no idea what you guys are talking about. Is it? So tell me the history of that.
So I moved to Nashville, wanted a space, and I really couldn't find one. And I connected with Kayla Sark, who's an illustrator in Nashville. And we started the studio. There was five of us. And it was just a space for designers or illustrators, whatever, rented out this one room. And then it was open for 2 years. I mean, it still is. I think they've just moved locations. But I was there for 2 years. And then we had drawing nights and a couple gallery shows, but mostly it was like a workspace for people to just come and, you know, talk shop and work and stuff. So I don't know how long you were there.
I was there for probably 6 to 8 months and just kind of spotty. I lived pretty far away, but it was such a cool thing that I just wanted to support it and be a part of it as best I could. The unique thing was that it was all book illustrators for the most part in this one studio. And I had done shared spaces in Portland before too, but that would be like an architect and a graphic designer and, you know, somebody doing music editing and, you know, all this different stuff. But the Warren in Nashville was really special because it was a lot of people working on books. There was a jewelry maker too, a couple of other people, but it was a unique space. And I do want to encourage anybody listening, if you're just working at home and you're a social person, you'll start to make that move and share a space. It became really affordable and it was really fun. The only reason I'd left was because it was just a little too far. And I opened a gallery in Franklin where I'm sharing a space. And so.
Okay. Yeah. I shared a space in Phoenix and in Denver, and I've always sought out other people to work with and be around. I think that's helpful. I
mean, did you seek out book illustrators, or did that just happen organically?
No, that just happened organically. I think Kayla was into it, and then the first group that we had, I think they weren't book illustrators. I think it kind of navigated, or it turned in that direction later. Yeah.
Where in Phoenix were you?
I was downtown, and I had a studio at the Lodge Art Studio on Grand Ave, by Bragg's Pie Factory. You know where that little strip is? So I had a studio there, and then I lived a couple blocks from there.
That's cool. I haven't connected very much with. I'm in Gilbert, Arizona, so I haven't connected too much with the community here, just because we moved here like right before COVID, like 6 months before that. So we were still like unpacking when everything shut down. But
how far is Gilbert from?
It's like 30, 45 minutes from downtown Phoenix.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's super cool. I like that you're sort of taking the initiative there. Like, I need a studio. I'm just going to open one and not like Googling artist studio and like, hey, do you guys have room for another artist?
Well, I do that too. I mean, but then, you know, I think they're rare.
Mm-hmm.
It's rare to find one that maybe isn't more like I think it's even rare to find like a big artist studio, like not illustrators, where people are like painting and stuff. There's co-working spaces and those are great, and they can work, like if you just want to show up and do computer work. But I think artist studios, especially like in medium to smaller cities, are not, I mean, they're just rare. So I would honestly rather join one, because it's a lot of work in the beginning. You have to, like, sign the lease, find space, do the insurance, like you have to do all that by yourself. So it's easier to join one, but they're harder to find. So
I'm curious too about all the moving that you've done, sort of the economics behind it. Like, it's not cheap to move. And you've got to sort of have, you said your husband's a teacher. So would it be like, hey, we want to move to Phoenix. I'll go find a job there since you can kind of work wherever. Or is it more like, hey, I got a job in Phoenix. What do you think? Should we move there? Is that like, which is sort of the driving force there?
It was the first. So like we want to move, and he applied for a couple places, just kind of anywhere. Mm-hmm. And then we got a job there, and then we had been to Denver for like a camping trip, and then we really loved it. And I just cannot handle the heat. So I was like, we have to leave Phoenix. He applied and got a job there. So we moved. So it was always a conscious thing to like move. And it was probably not financially smart. I mean, it definitely wasn't. Like, it was really tough, but I actually didn't grow up traveling a lot at all. And still like wouldn't consider myself a traveled person. When we met, one of the reasons he wanted to become a teacher was so that he could work anywhere and travel. And we both wanted to travel, didn't grow up doing it. So we just sort of like took the hit financially and just, made that work. Just another good thing about coming back to Michigan, it is cheaper to live here. And like, we just bought a house, and it's just, we can be smarter now having a base and then traveling versus like having to move, because it is not, it's not cheap. And
Well, not only the expense, but also, you know, one of the themes that me and Jake talked about that we wanted to focus on with you is like, how do you make things work as an illustrator and the life of a working illustrator, you know, versus the ideal, you know, so you're moving and you're still working on projects, right? And so how are you navigating that? Are you bringing all your supplies with you? Or are you working in little bunches and then being off for a little while and moving and then working in bunches? Or how are you navigating that?
No, I'm like working up until like tomorrow we're leaving with a U-Haul. I have a box in front of me. I have to finish this thing real quick. I'll save these color pencils and then I'll do that. And then I'll whip my scanner out and I'll, you know, it's like, I think from the outside, it's rare to like take a break if I can help it. So usually I feel like my clients wouldn't even know I was moving, but that's like so stressful. And when I moved from Japan, I definitely took some time, cause that was like a huge move. But I think other than that, it's just, I mean, if I show you my apartment, it's literally just bare because we're moving today, cleaning this apartment today. So it's like always kind of on the fly, but it's, you know, it's just.
I was checking out your Instagram stories for the new house and the painting and all the prep you're doing. So it's so fun. It's exciting. I'm excited for you.
Yeah. Thanks. It feels nice. We've never had a house before. Everything's felt so temporary, you know, so. Mm-hmm. It's like finally we can paint the walls and
they had it painted all teal, right? That was like
teal, lemon yellow, Barney purple, like
the teal I'm okay with, but like Barney
purple. No, it's a hot teal and they used it. They had a bunch of that in Portland too. And they painted everything with it. The whole interior with this, it's bright teal. It's not like a really nice
windy. You
know, yeah, it's a really bright. You have to cover it up.
Yeah. With three.
So, you graduated college art school in 2010, right? Mm-hmm. You've been working professionally for 11 years now. Mm-hmm. And 11 years you've been like traveling. What you said, 13 moves in the last 10 years or
13? Wow. Yeah, probably in the last 15 years. And that was like all through college, moved to live with this person, then moved with this person, then you moved here. And then, you know, like those little like local moves where you're just like all over.
So now you're like, you know, I assume you bought a house, like the next 10, 20 years is more of a, we've got a home base and we're just going to do excursions, but always come back to this. Is that kind of the thinking there?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There's a lot of projects you can't do when you're like moving, you know, even when you can, you know, we're pretty mobile, but like, I want to do more sculpture and even like woodwork or do like, I want to build things or I want to do 3D stuff. And like, you just can't do that when you're moving.
Right.
You know, interesting. Well, I saw that your bulletin, you know, you have a newsletter that you do and the next one is going to be about personal work. And is that the kind of stuff you're talking about doing 3D ish stuff? Or are you talking about another kind of personal illustration kind of stuff?
I think both. The newsletter is more like how I see like a couple different types of personal work. Like, some of it might be like play where you don't have any expectation. And some of it might be like, it's personal as though I'm going to, you know, finish almost like a passion project I'm going to finish. So we're talking about those, but for me personally, those personal projects, how many times can I say personal, but those projects that I do want to work on, some of them are 3D and some of them are painting. I really love 3D work a lot and I just like, don't do it. Maybe because I've moved so much, but, yeah,
you gotta have tools in like a workshop and stuff like stock, you know.
Yeah, you have to have a workspace, like a legitimate workspace.
Yeah. So going back to like the last 11 years, you come out of college and roll right into like the rise of social media and it's like crossroads with, you know, visual artists, and you have like, you're no slouch. You've got 275,000 Instagram followers. There's a lot of pressure there. I noticed in January this year, you're like, hey, I'm stepping back. I need a break. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious, what was the reason for that decision? Because obviously Instagram or social media has been really good for your career, but I want to know like what went into that decision, how that pause went and sort of your relationship with social media now as a, you know, working illustrator.
Yeah. Well, I took a break for like 6 months and it was amazing because I just felt more connected to my real life. And also I think moving home felt like, it just felt like I reconnected, you know, to myself. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't so worried about, you know, posting, and I was still doing my newsletters through that. So it was like, you know, I'm still working and I'm still sharing in a different way, but it felt like less pressure to post every day. I don't know. Everybody has a love-hate relationship with social media, and I definitely do too. When I got back into it slowly, I thought, well, I'll just be really, I'll be thoughtful. That's not the word I'm looking for, but intentional about it. Mm-hmm. And I'll just post and I'll, you know, connect a little bit and then I'll put it down. But, you know, when we work alone a lot and we want that connection, it's very easy to just pick up and just scroll mindlessly. And it's mm-hmm. such a shitty feeling to do that. So I set like last, I don't know, month, I set a timer on my phone. And at first I was like, okay, I'm doing really good. Like I've got 5 minutes, but now I'm just like, ignore timer.
I hate that you can turn off. I hate that you can press ignore the timer. I wish it would just shut it down.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes. So I love social. I mean, I really do feel like because it came out right when I was like just starting into my career and moving a lot, like I connected with all those people on social media, and I was doing a lot of different industries. So I did editorial, I did fine art, I did a lot of stuff. And then I think that helped it grow. It was like all these different layers of networks. And now I don't know. I think Instagram, I don't know where it's going to be like in the next 5 years. I feel like part of me thinks all the artists are going to be like, you know what? Screw this. I'm out. And they're all going to leave. Or it's just going to die and TikTok's going to take over and all this new stuff. And I don't have the energy for that. So.
Right. Yeah. I'm sort of in that same boat with you there. And I'm actually, this last month, I unfollowed everybody on Instagram. I was following over 1,000 people.
Yeah.
And I just unfollowed. Instagram actually was like, you unfollow 200 people in like 5 minutes. And they're like, hey, you need to chill. The little pop-up said, you can't do anything else for the rest of the day on here.
So you weird.
Yeah. Did you unfollow me? So it took me like a week.
Am I still
I unfollowed in? You. I unfollowed Rebecca. I unfollowed everybody. Yeah. But what's been cool about this, and I'm just throwing it out there for you and for whoever, is now when I open up Instagram, I don't have a feed. There's no feed. It's just the last thing I posted. And if I want to look up, if an artist comes to my mind, I can look them up and see what their thing was. And I actually copied and pasted everybody I followed and put it on a web page on my website that's private. So I can go there and like tap on their link and be taken to their page. So I'm more like deliberately like looking to see who I actually care about and what I want to, you know, what their recent posts were or whatnot. I'm just throwing it out there. You know, you might want to try it. Maybe it's a drastic move, but it has completely changed like the anxiety in my life and the almost like you said that scrolling. I've had more time to do stuff. I'm really more focused on my own what I'm trying to accomplish versus comparing myself to others. So,
well, there's a whole thing with that. My Instagram feed I had curated specifically to artists, only artists that I love. And that was my criteria, is like, I'm not doing it as a friend thing. I'm just the people that when I see the work, I'm just like super inspired. And the byproduct of that is if I ever have a moment of doubt, when I go to my Instagram feed, it is the best work you've ever seen. I mean, for me, it's terrifying. I'm like, oh my God, everyone is so good. Like, I don't want to even make a mark. Like, it looks like everybody's just effortlessly doing these amazing paintings, and they're all so good, and they're all different styles and mediums. And I'm like, oh, I want to try that. And these, I can't be as good as them. And like, it creates a little bit of anxiety, and I've never had that before. I'm pretty comfortable with myself and my art. And I've been doing it a long time, but I've just noticed it as I curated it to a really specific kind of feed that I personally had picked. It has risen the level of anxiety.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And some people need to follow a bunch of crappy artists
Just that's so what
I'm
going to do now.
I'm a badass. I'm going to follow only like kindergartners.
Right. You kind of need to like know thyself. Actually,
that's why I'm super intimidated. Only follow children. You feel like they're so free. Like,
oh no.
That'd be a whole level.
I taught a comic book class one time for kindergartners, and I was telling them about an establishing shot, and they all started drawing their establishing shot of their cities and their houses and stuff in Sharpie. And I was like, what are you doing? Like, it was the most impressive thing I've ever seen in my life.
That's so they're just like, I'm going for it. Why wouldn't I
just like draw?
So I want to get back to like that, I guess, forward, like looking forward in how does an artist, and I think you're a perfect example of this, how does a contemporary illustrator, working artist, like use these tools that we've been given? And I've noticed you have a blog, you have a newsletter, and you're just starting a Patreon. And I'm curious how those three things work together, where they overlap and where they're like divided, like where they don't cover each other. And so I'm just wondering, like, what's the strategy there? Like, what's the thinking behind that?
I wish there was more strategy, but I feel like it kind of came together organically, and now I'm finding ways to like make them work together, which is I guess how I work in general, so that's fine. But I used to do I've had a blog for like 10 years. My blog is the same, and it goes back way back, but I definitely have been sporadic over the years. And then almost 2 years ago, I posted one and I thought, I'm just gonna do this. Like, I want it to be a monthly thing. I posted one, and then the next month I did it. And then by like the fourth or fifth month, like I post them later at night, and I would get an email like, hey, did I miss today's? Or like, I was looking for it. And that meant a lot to me, that like, even to hear from a couple people that like they were waiting that day.
Yeah.
I need that pressure, that social pressure to like give.
Accountability. Like,
yeah, it's good accountability. Like, if you think people are waiting for it, you know, especially with a blog, like there's no immediate feedback, like there is for Instagram. And I think it's healthier. So I kept doing that, and now I've done it every month. And in that break too, you know, I wasn't on Instagram, but I was still doing a monthly post. So my newsletter.
Can I pause you really quick?
Yeah.
And for those of you who haven't seen her monthly posts, like, this isn't just like, hey guys, here's what I'm working on. This is like a very thoughtful, insightful, like reflection on something that you're going through, or, you know, things that you've experienced that you've distilled down into, you know, beautiful explanations, but also you do like custom illustrations for these blog posts. So like, this is, you're no slouch when it comes to like the blog posts. And consistently, like I've noticed on the first of every month, the last, I don't know, 6 or 7 months, that post is showing up.
Yeah.
Really cool.
Thanks. Yeah. I think just having that feedback from people was really reaffirming for me. And then being able to, there have been months where I'm like, this is so much work. Why am I doing this? You know, because it's free, like just giving it away. And some friends of mine were like, you should probably charge for this, but I don't want to. And it's been really nice for me to be able to like work through my thoughts. And then also to be able to illustrate my own ideas. Like, I don't have a client, so it's fun. And it's not like sometimes just to make a painting is a little bit overwhelming. You're not really sure, like, you know, the blank page is scary, but if I do an article, it's like easy for me and it's fun for me to illustrate those. So I've been doing those, and I started my newsletter right when I started that like first main blog post, which was like in February, it'll be 2 years. And the newsletter links to that blog post. And then it also just has like a couple updates of like, this is going on, this book is coming out. It's like a little extra. And then at the bottom, I do things that are more personal. Like, I like to cook a lot. So like, what am I cooking? Or I read this article that's interesting. Or those are fun because they're more personal. And then I just started the Patreon last week. I launched it. So like, I'll officially launch it on October 1st. And that is the blog post. I'm building on top of that for Patreon. So it's like extras on top of that post. So that might be like exercises or like an extra in-depth look at that subject matter. But then I also have, I'm doing more personal work on Patreon and showing behind the scenes of that. So it feels like already it's been really nice to kind of just have this space. I've been wanting to launch one for a really long time, but I felt like it was going to be scary, that pressure to like keep posting, or, you know, what was that relationship gonna look like? And so far, I think it's been really good. So I'm still navigating that, but
I'm going to sign up for your Patreon right now.
You're so sweet.
Well, I can't let Lee do it and not me do it.
Do you guys you have one, Jake? You have a Patreon?
Yeah, I do.
You do. Jake's got one. I'm thinking about making mine, but you're sort of inspiring me on two fronts. I've started putting together my newsletter, and I've sent out two of them. But they're just kind of dabbling in it. I haven't really found my voice there yet. But seeing how you're doing, I think a monthly one is a good idea. And then the Patreon is cool. Like seeing Jake's Patreon every month and how the stuff he's working on and all this behind the scenes stuff. It's really a nice new way to really not only support an artist that you care about, but really learn their process and see in depth. Once you see enough of them, you start to see these patterns of how they work and all that stuff. And so I just really dig it. So I got to do it.
Yeah.
I've been doing Patreon for like 5 years now, I think. And I paused it for a couple years in the middle just because there was pressure. Like, oh my gosh, it's the end of the month and I didn't do anything for the Patreon and I felt bad and like people had given me their $3 and I didn't deliver or whatever. Yeah. But where I found it now, and there's like two ways to do a Patreon, right? And there's the I'm providing a service for you, and so you're paying money to receive this sort of offering. And mm-hmm. then there's I'm just making my thing, and if you want to support me, you know, throw some money my way. Mm-hmm. And so those are like the two, you know, the ends of the spectrum, I believe, with like Patreon. And mm-hmm. I think you just have to find where you're comfortable with that. And for me, it started out being, I'm making this specific thing and you get access to this thing every month and you're supporting the creation of this thing was where it started. And now it's more like, I'm just showing you behind the scenes and you're just going to see everything I'm creating. And that's been a lot less pressure because it's stuff I don't want to post on Instagram because it's not finished, but I could post it on Instagram, on Patreon. And, you know, those people are there to see like behind the scenes sort of things. So I think, and I don't want to, you know, I know you're just like, you've probably got it all figured out and you've got a plan and everything. It is a lot to keep up though. If it's like a monthly, like here's a lesson on how to create a thing. But that said, you know, at the end of a year of doing that, you've got 12 solid like exercises and lessons, plus you've shown them all the things that you've been working on, and you could repackage that as a book or something, you know, or a PDF download so you don't even have to worry about printing all this stuff that you're creating. I'm just looking at them like, if I was in college now, or even, you know, newly graduated, and all of this was distilled into like one, you know, thing I could just own and flip through and refer back to, like that would be super, super valuable. So I'm just throwing that out there.
Yeah, it's like, I am interested in doing more like a book form or publishing something like that. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, the thing that I'm still trying to figure out is like, if there is this pressure to post, and then like, if I post it here and people are paying for it, how much of it can I post, you know, over here? Right. Like, do people have to, like, what's the price point at that? And then like, if you want to make something amazing for these people that are supporting you, it's like, well, I can't put all my energy into that, because if it's amazing and only like 100 people see it or 200 people see it, and like the world doesn't, how is that working for my portfolio? Like, where does your energy go? So I can totally see how you'd be like, I think for me, because I'm already doing these blog posts, it's writing. It's a lot more writing, and there are illustrations with it for sure. But I think to like add extras in that way is easy for me, but I am already seeing how I have to be intentional about like sharing, but having it clear that like, I can still take this final and I can show it in my portfolio, but only you see like behind the scenes of how that was made. Cause there has to be this balance of how much you still share for free.
I think people for the most part, are like cool with that. Like, I got to see this happen. I got to see, you know, the sort of the anticipate, you know, everything that's going into this. And then they're a part of like the release when you reveal it to the public, yeah. Like, oh yeah, I knew about this last month, you know?
Yeah. That makes, which is exciting to be able to like, yeah, on the inside for that.
That's yeah. Cool. And I like the $5 one tier sort of thing. I see a lot of artists sort of go into that because there's been the, you could donate $1 and get access to this. You can donate or donate.
That's too confusing.
You know, support at $10 and you get access to this. And it is a little confusing. I'm just at two levels right now. And you know, okay. I found that works good, you know, but it would be nice to simplify it, I think.
Yeah. I just feel like I can't like think of, yeah, it's just easy. Like five is, having a whole Patreon. I mean, you know, we have like actual jobs too. That's not like a job. Mm-hmm. My newsletter is not my job. Like I illustrate books and I make paintings, like I make work and that's my job. So this is a side thing. So yeah, it's like, it has to be as simple as possible.
Well, question smart, related to that, because you're so clear in your descriptions of how you work and you document the process well. And believe me, we've worked with a lot of teachers that don't do that even close to what you're doing, just in your, how you explain even the simplest stuff. Are you teaching anywhere? And have you thought about teaching as a separate thing? Or would that add just too much to your plate?
So I like teaching workshops and I love showing up and like, I love giving instruction and hanging out with people and see them come to life. Like I love that, but I don't think that I can teach or have an interest in teaching like long-term and having to worry about grades or having to worry about them showing up, or, you know, that's not really where my passion lies, but I do like teaching.
Do you like doing the shorter, like single hit, like a workshop kind of thing, 3 hours
weekend,
on
a week, even yeah. Or something that's 3 hours long. I think like 3 days is good. Cause you like really get in, you get to know the people, you know, and like they make something amazing. 2 or 3 hours is like, what did I just show them? Like, did they get anything out of that? I feel like that's just, so I love, I do like teaching, but it also feels like it's such a tremendous amount of work.
It is. I mean, that's what we talked about. You know, me and Jake and Will have done a lot of presentations with like SCBWI and stuff. Mm-hmm. Just doing an hour long presentation will take the full week leading up to the presentation just to get that 1 hour ready and clear. And hopefully, like you said, it's such a short amount of time. Did people get what you wanted them to out of it, you know?
Yeah. And I also feel like sometimes those things, every time I do one, I'm like, I'm going to make this legit so I can use this again and again and again. I never do because I'm always like, you know, I'm always like rushing. I'm like, okay, I'm going to put this together. And it's fine. It's like next time I'm going to do a really good job. And so I can't use the material again. And it's such a waste. So I don't know. Do you guys like for teaching the school you're doing, is that like how much of that?
That's sort of why we did it. So the exact reasons you mentioned is like, you know, that at the university level, doling out all those grades and going to meetings and all that kind of stuff, it just sucks. It doesn't seem like it should be a part of it that I have to grade you on. And it's always so awkward when somebody doesn't try on something, you got to give them a bad grade or they don't want to be there anyway. I mean, what we've done with our sort of school is that because it's not required, people show up and they want to be there and everybody wants to learn. We don't have to give them that grade. So it's been really kind of rewarding that way, but we're just starting to set up kind of workshops and things like that, like you're talking about too, because that's the hardest part about us getting teachers is like, hey, will you give us, you know, the next 11 weeks of your life? That's a tough ask for anybody, but saying, hey, we're going to do this workshop on children's books. Most people are like, I'm down for that. You know, it's a fun experience. And so we're learning too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm sensing from here, like I'm thinking in these big chunks for you, because I'm also doing that with my own career as well. And I don't want to like project myself on you, but it seems like these next 10 years for you are you're wanting to like really focus in and make some new stuff, maybe go in a different direction, but also really like make some more personal stuff, less client work. Is that what I'm kind of gathering here?
Yeah. I just finished up my last like book for another author and I just want to do my own stuff. Maybe, hopefully, if that could be this whole next 10 years, yes. Like I I feel like I've been waiting and it's finally time to dive in. Like,
are you writing it? Do you have a dummy?
Yeah. So I have one. I spent last year writing it, and I, it just got picked up by the same, publisher that did my ghost book in 2017. So we're working together, still like in contract negotiation, but the editor and I have started working on it. It just feels like, you know, when you do client work and then you finally do your work and somebody trusts you, and it's like, it feels so indulgent. You can't even believe it's real.
Yeah.
That's what I want. I want more of that. And I want different. Yeah. I love picture books, but I don't really even see myself as a picture book person. And so I feel like there's also been like this disconnect in the last like 4 or 5 years, you know, going to ALA or being even part of the SCBWI or like being in that world. And, you know, those sort of interviews or questions or processes or whatever, I've always kind of felt like this isn't 100% me, but I know it, you know, like, or I not know it, but I'm learning it. And now I'm like, I want to build like wild sets and like different 3D things. And I want to write and I want to have more world building and I want to like have a shop, and I like world building, but storytelling is not natural for me. So anyway, that's like a very all over answer to your question, but
I want to, is it too much to get a generic overview about what your book's about? The children's book?
No, I've shared it a little bit. It's about this mouse and this bee, and they live in a cider press in the woods in Michigan. And it's just like about their, I'm still figuring it out, but it's like about their, I wouldn't even call them adventures, because I'd say it's like pretty simple. Like nothing is that epic, but it's about like their relationship with each other and the other characters that live around them and essentially their personalities. And they have, they just, it's about celebration, honestly. Like all the stuff that I'm working on is about celebration and like reverence and making the most of really small moments or making the most of a small, like whatever you have. And so they, this bee cooks all the time. She plans parties, and Henry is, her friend is two female friends that live there. And she is a, like a furniture maker. So she takes scraps and like builds, and she's the one that built their house. And it's just about like their world, I guess. It's interesting. Like I was talking to the editor, we're both like, what is this book going to be? Cause it's not, it's a really long book, but it's not just, you know, one story. But I'm excited about it. But it,
I like the themes, and I you know, knowing your style, just hearing you describe it, I can almost picture some of the imagery, you know, already in your style. And I think I also learned something, like that is how your pitch is how a children's book's supposed to sound. Now I realize why my pitches don't work, because like the last book dummy that I pitched, a book idea I pitched to Jake, everyone dies in it. It's a horror.
Well, that's also life.
Everybody except the main two characters, which I'm realizing is probably not a popular theme in children's books. So I need to like find my audience.
Well, let's
figure it out.
I mean, I like books that are sad too, or that are dark, you know, I don't know.
Well, it's a weird time for publishing too, because I feel like, there's things that are successful out there that like defy convention, right? Like, and this has nothing to do with children's book, but like Tales from the Loop is a Amazon movie or an Amazon show that came out, and it was based on just a book of an artist who was doing a collection of illustrations following like this theme of like weird robots and sci-fi things in a very realistic, like a Nordic type of environment, right? And it was a mood, and it had style to it. And then he put it together with little short stories for each of the images. And I believe it was first done as a Kickstarter, and then picked up by a peripheral publisher, not a mainstream publisher. But then it became like this successful book, like in sort of concept art circles, but it bled out from there to people who are just interested in cool sci-fi. Then it becomes this Amazon series, and I'm just like, that never ever would have been published by Random House, you know, but it found its audience. And I'm thinking about what you're doing, and while it has broad appeal to it, it doesn't have to be through Random House. It could be through, you know, some other publisher or self-published and still find its audience, and you could still get like this fan base for it and turn it into a thing. It's just a cool time.
The format is changing, you know, of what some, I mean, something having to be 32 pages or having to exist in this, you know, form, right. It's become more organic, which is really cool.
Right.
I think sadly COVID made risk-taking more difficult for publishers. And like my husband and I pitched a book, and it's sad. It's really sweet, but funny, but it's also sad. And the character dies in the end, and the publisher and the editor was like, no, this is just like not something we can do right now. The landscape's changed.
Yeah.
And we need more hopeful things. And like the idea of a bunch of characters dying now, I just feel like already the it was hard to take a risk, and now it's like even more.
It really is. But I just got a call with my agent yesterday, and she's like, I don't know what's getting published. Like, I don't know what's making through.
Yeah, it's a new world. But yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, if you want to make it, and then there's like, it's like, you'll find a way. I mean, it's difficult, but I just think there's so many children's books. Every time somebody's like, it's not getting picked up, I just think it has to in some capacity, because there's a way. There's, you know.
Yeah. So you're somewhat taking a dipping a toe into like the entrepreneurial side, where you've got the Patreon. Have you done like self-published stuff before, or had an online shop or things like that?
Yeah, I used to have an online shop before we moved to Japan, and that was pretty basic. Like, I just sold prints, maybe for like a year or two. But when I started out, actually, like, I wasn't doing illustration. I was doing like markets. I was hand making a lot of stuff, and then doing a lot of fine art, gallery work, selling that way. And I couldn't get a job. Like, I couldn't get an agent. I couldn't get a client. So that's what I was doing, was making, you know, more of the entrepreneurial stuff like you're talking about.
Okay.
Then it felt like I needed to do it. And now it feels like I really miss that. So that now it's a conscious choice, and it's good. I can, I've learned more, but yeah, I'm excited about doing that. Like having a shop and doing more home stuff, doing more, selling like directly to people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's tough though, because each thing that you adds a whole layer of admin work, and like, okay, I just sold a print, and how does that get shipped? And I think like you already probably have done it, so you already understand the, you know, what to do there. But a lot of people contact me and they're so excited about prints, and then when they actually have to start shipping and stuff, they're so confused, and it takes so long to figure out all the, you know, other stuff around it.
It's so true.
Where do you find the time, or do you have a method of productivity and managing your day? Because you got all these different things going, and they're all going at the same time. And then yet you like to cook, and which means that you're good at controlling your time, because you wouldn't have time to cook if you're just doing all that randomly.
Yeah. I mean, I just feel like if you know when you work, and I work best in the morning. So it's like, I write or like do the, you know, creative work then. And also setting a timer helps. So if I'm really distracted and I really need to get something done, like I set a timer and I work. I feel like I used to be way busier than I am now, actually. Like, I used to just say yes to everything. And I was, you know, when I first started out, I was doing a lot more, honestly, I think. Like gallery shows, and I was doing client stuff, and I did have an agent, and I was doing editorial stuff. And it like got way burnt out, like maybe 2017 or 18, and went through like, it was really rough. Like, I was like burnt out. I was done. And I feel like now I can manage it, and I'm doing projects I love, and that helps. Cause like, you want to show up and you want to work and you love that stuff, you know? So I think that's,
I feel like, yeah, like your 20s is like this, let's try everything and see what happens. And then in your 30s, it's more like, okay, now I know what works, and now I know what I really like. So let's try that now and see how that goes.
When you feel comfortable saying no, and you can say no, it feels nice to be to a point where you're like, that's not a job for me, so I'm not going to do that. Mm-hmm. No.
But I think what you said is important, because we've talked about it a lot on our podcast, that you know, people ask how to manage their time and how much work they should be doing. And we've always come to the conclusion that for pros, for people who end up in careers like us three and Will too, there is a time where you will be overdoing it and you almost have to go that far to where it's, you know, 15 hour days and you're just painting all day and you don't get the weekends and all that stuff. So it's interesting to hear you kind of back that up too, that you, it's almost been the one consistent with almost everybody that I know who's a professional.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say that's true. Everybody that I know that's working, it's not like they just eased into doing work they love and were able to just like have a regular, like 8 to 4 or 9 to 5.
Right.
It was like they were working nonstop. And then finally, you know, you get to a place where you can take it easy. But as you guys know, it's sometimes you can't, and sometimes I can't cook. And sometimes it's frozen pizza every night. Cause I'm like, I'm just telling. What I did for this last book I was working on, I just like could not get it together. So I was waking up at 4 in the morning and I was working and like getting so much done. And then, you know, taking a little nap in the end of the day or like in the middle, waking up, having more coffee, feeling like a morning again, working. Cause that's when I work best is the morning. Do you like find ways to, yeah. I don't have any kids though. I know you both have children. I don't have any children. So
that helps.
So there's
it makes
that.
It easier.
Yeah.
It's
have
a fun. Different game.
Yeah. So,
well, we should wrap it up here, but before we go, we usually do Q&A, like we answer questions on the podcast. And I was wondering if we could throw out a question from one of our listeners to you, and maybe we all kind of can answer this. It goes a little bit along with what we've talked about today. Is that cool?
Yeah.
I'm bummed that you're wrapping it. I've got like 9 questions.
We'll bring her on
they
again.
They have nothing to do with vampires or werewolves. Yeah. Let me pick 3 of my questions and just go through quick hits.
Oh my gosh, that's a whole episode right there.
No, questions.
I am really
these will be fast. Okay.
Okay, go for it.
If you weren't an illustrator, what job would you have?
I would be a vet or like an animal caretaker.
See? That's super that's interesting cool. And very, very yeah. quick. Jake, what would you do? What did you say that you would do if you didn't do illustration?
If I didn't do illustration?
Yeah.
I don't know. I'd be like a pool cleaner. I don't know.
You haven't thought about this at all.
That's all I'm qualified for.
Every day when I'm getting burned out in illustration, I think I want to work that little kiosk at the national park system in Big Sur, that little hut that just cars go by and pay.
Oh, yeah. I did actually. I want to be the guy that's in charge of like the otter exhibit at the zoo.
Oh, that's right.
Like okay. Feed the otters.
All right, quick one. This one's a tricky one though. So you're going to have to think how to make this short. What project would you do over if you could do it over? Looking at all your bodies of work, which project would you do over, and how would you change it? Or is there a project looking back on it that you, knowing what you know now, you could have done it better?
There are projects I'd say no to. Is that doing it over?
Yeah, well, I mean, actually, yeah. Why would you say no? You don't even have to list the project, because I know how that can be weird if it's a book. But
well, let me just say that if you start doing a lot of nonfiction projects, every publisher will think that you just want to do nonfiction books, and you might not want to do nonfiction books at all.
Yeah,
and
we've talked about that.
Books are so long and so it's such a massive project that by the time you're done with it, it's been like 2 years, and it's like you just have it's a big ship to maneuver. So like going in and knowing the projects you really want to go after is smart.
That's awesome. Quick. Okay. My last one. This is a tricky one too. What is the hardest thing that a publisher or an assignment could have where you see it and you're like, oh no, like for me, it would be like, how do I handle a crowd scene or a close-up of a face? Because I don't draw that much. Is there anything that when you see it, you're like, oh man, I don't want to, that one's going to be tough for me.
Yeah, probably a crowd. I hate crowds. I hate just like blobs of random people, or probably like cars. Like I can't unless they're like from 1908 or something
right.
like
no Model T.
Yeah. Cars and no crowds.
Yeah, weird.
I like how you did a book where I can't remember the name of it. It was about the circus performer.
Yeah. There was a lot of crowds in that.
But you did it nice because you did a crowd like where it's like 4 main people and then the rest of the crowd vignette.
Mm-hmm.
I saw that trick.
Yes. That was so hard. Even to just do that.
That's the secret, though. Like, I was, I actually did like an impromptu art lesson with a couple of kids in the neighborhood because they had Calvin and Hobbes books sitting out. I'm like, oh, and I knew they loved to draw. But this is the secret of crowds. And I flipped open to one of the pages of Calvin, or one of the Sunday strips, and it's the one where he gets an A on a test and they hold a parade for him. I don't know if you guys ever read Calvin Hobbes. There's this massive parade and confetti and elephants and everything, and I said, look at this crowd scene. And I said, how many people did he actually draw? And there's like three people in the foreground, and then the rest is just like unfinished heads. And that's the secret. Like, that's the code to crowd drawing.
That is the way to do it.
You figured it out.
Yeah.
The vignette is smooth. I mean, you would do the same thing. You wouldn't draw every blade of grass unless you're Will Terry. Oh. And you wouldn't draw every leaf unless you're Will. So why would you do it with a crowd? Yeah.
I could see him doing a crowd scene with like every detail. Would he?
But he loves that stuff.
Okay.
You just gave me an idea, Jake. Like, I've got a couple of custom leaf brushes that I've made for doing forest, where you got a mid-level shot where you can see leaves. It's not totally in the distance, but it's just a blob. And I can just pepper all these different kind of leaves that I've already built. I want to make a little crowd brush in Photoshop.
Do it. Yeah.
Swipe across a whole crowd.
One crowd.
You could sell that for $1,000, that one brush.
Like,
true. Like, this crowd brush will save you 2 days of work. How much is a day? You know, what's your day rate?
That's right.
All right,
Jake, cool. Go ahead. Sorry.
Those are great questions.
Yeah, those were good. Thanks. And we're just trying to be conscious of your time, conscientious of your time. So I know you got to pack up and move in and all that stuff. Yeah. So this comes from Griffin, and it titles it "How Not to Get Bummed Out." Okay, so it says here, it's easy to feel overwhelmed by the massive amounts of content from highly skilled artists all over social media. Every once in a while, I'll come across some 17-year-old kid who has just started drawing a year or two ago, and their art is top tier stuff like that makes me feel like I'm just doing something fundamentally wrong. Am I not practicing enough? Am I not practicing correctly? Or do they just happen to have an incredible amount of innate ability? I'm sure you guys have seen these people too, right? He says, I know you might say that we should not compare ourselves to others, and we should focus on how we compare our past selves instead of the art industry, instead of others. But the art industry is highly competitive, and we have to consume art and be in touch with what other artists are doing. To say we shouldn't compare ourselves to others seems unrealistic. So instead, how do we mitigate the damage of comparison and steer clear of those negative trains of thought? Do you ever experience that? And do you have anything that you've like figured out to like cope with it?
Yeah, I think that we can control how much content we take in and how many artists we're comparing ourselves to. So we need to know who's out there, but also, like, if I see somebody who's amazing, whatever age they are, you know, if they're making work that I don't really think I want to make, I can still be jealous of that. But I don't think that's healthy to really take that on, because I don't want to do that type of work. So we need to be very particular about like what media we're bringing in, and then think, okay, I really want, that's like what my goal and I'm going towards. Because there are artists that do amazing, like realistic stuff, and I'm like, oh my God, I should be doing that. They're incredible. That's not really what I want to be making. So like, know what you want to be making and looking at. And then, I don't know, I always just think like, everybody goes through their own, I guess this sounds callous, but I just feel like everybody gets old and dies. You know, there's been people that have been amazing art and been amazing artists, and you know, then they die. And the same will happen to us, and the same will happen to this 17-year-old genius, you know. And there's always going to be somebody that's amazing. And I feel like if you spend more time focusing on that, you're kind of missing the joy of making art, which is why we have this job, you know?
So, I like
it's tough. Yeah, it's tough.
That's great.
Yeah.
Can that be the title of the podcast? Everybody Gets Old and Dies.
Everybody Gets Old and Die with Rebecca Green.
Please do it.
I love it. Well, I don't know that I would add anything to that. That's a good answer.
Yeah, like, that was
curate
great.
Who you follow and know thyself. Like, recognize what you're in the game for, essentially.
Yep.
Did you have anything you wanted to add to that, Lee?
No, it's perfect answer. Perfect wrap up.
Okay, cool. Well, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me. This is so fun. I mean, like I said, I listened to like all of them, so it's cool to be on the other side.
Dude, that makes me feel amazing. Like, I don't realize who listens to this and whatnot. It's hard to tell with a podcast.
It makes me nervous now. Rebecca's going to be nervous listening. I'm totally nervous.
No way. No, it's fun. It's cool. I'm glad you guys are doing it and continuing it. And yeah, these interviews, it should be interesting doing interviews and like bringing more people in. And yeah. I'm sure you're still doing your own thing. And then, you know.
We're just doing back and forth. So interview alternate. 1 week. Question and answer the next week. So
that's awesome.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
So, thanks. Yes. Great to meet you guys, and I'll talk to you soon.
Bye.
Bye.
Okay, that was Rebecca Green. Great conversation with her, and I think we said everything we wanted to said in the intro there. But I just want to thank everybody for listening to 3-Point Perspective. It was brought to you by svslearn.com, where becoming a great illustrator starts. Today, your hosts have been Lee White and Jake Parker. And again, Will Terry couldn't join us. He's on assignment. He'll be back with us next episode for sure. You could find Lee White's work at leewhiteillo.com or leewhiteillustration.com and on Instagram at leewhiteillo. And my work is at jakeparker.com and at mrjakeparker.com and at Jake Parker on Instagram. I'm just mangling that and fuddling through it. And Will Terry, our normal co-host, is willterryart.com and at Will Terry on it's willterry.com and at Will Terry Art on Instagram. I flipped them all. Trying to do it from memory. Anyway, special thanks to Daniel too, our podcast producer, for keeping the wheels running on this whole joint. And special thanks to David Bro, who is our producer here at SVS Learn. And special thanks to Lisa Fott, who also is like our administrator person who kind of gets everything running under the engine. So under the hood, the engine running under the hood, I think is what she is there. So, all right. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next time.